Well, good day, everyone, everywhere, and special greetings to all those seated in heavenly places in Jesus, our Messiah. The name of this broadcast is Cross the Border, and this is a live prophecy reality edition. Yes, we come to the broadcast live once a week. The studio cam is on, and you can join the conversation, if any shows up, in the chat room at FirstAmendmentRadio.net or .com. Go there, click on the chat room button, and actually you can see, watch the live studio cam. There's a small YouTube screen in the right-hand column. Also, there's a number at the top of that column for calling in, if you'd like to call in at any time during the broadcast. Your comments, questions are welcome. You can also try to Skype Far Live, although that's on another screen with another button. So I think I should hear a notice or something if it comes on. That's the problem with being your own producer. Things may work and they may not, but the phone will work. It will ring and I will answer it right here. Yeah, anyway, what are we going to talk about today? Let's see, this first segment, I've got several articles I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about a little bit about prophecy. This is prophecy reality, and we try to bring it to the reality of where we are in prophecy, and of course, using the historicist method, that is, prophecy is history in advance. Who could argue with that one, right? It's history in advance. And as it unfolds in history, we recognize it. And it's always been that way. Old Testament prophets gave a lot of prophecies, and some of them were fulfilled before Christ came, and some of them were fulfilled by the coming of Christ and events that came at that time and thereafter. And so the prophecy was given, the history was told in advance by the one who sees all history, from all time, before it happens. He created all things, so he created the history before it happened. So he gives us some clues. He verifies his word by telling us about things that will happen in the future. And so we have a record of prophecy fulfilled from the Old Testament, in the Old Testament, different books. There are 66 different books written successively throughout history. And the later books have a record of history fulfilled from earlier books, and so it is with the New Testament. But since 95 AD, thereabouts, when the last book of prophecy, the Revelation of Jesus Christ, was penned by John, and through the Holy Spirit, of course, we have got no more prophecy. And the book of Revelation contains an outline of history from the time it was written, the things which must shortly come to pass as to their commencement, and fill up the rest of history until Christ comes. And then, of course, we see in chapter 19, we read about his coming and things that will transpire upon his return and shortly before his return even. And then in chapter 20, we find out what happens when he returns. There will be a millennial reign of Christ. And then it goes on into the future. What happens after the 1,000 years is up? We have a new heaven and new earth after the final judgment. And then we go into the eternal state. And that's pretty much a roundup of the book of Revelation, if you want to encapsulate it. And so that you can understand it easily, that's what's going on. But where we are in that history, well, we're toward the end of it. We're coming up to the end of the sixth millennia and the beginning of the seventh or Sabbath millennia, the millennial reign of Christ. And we have a few years left, and I would approximate we have about 35 years left till the end of the sixth millennia. If you're interested in it, you can go to my website. And if you go to crosstheborder.org, You'll see in the upper right-hand corner of the homepage on the website, there's a link to What Year Is It? And you should check that out, and you'll find that in the pages of the Bible, there's a chronology that you can follow up to the Roman calendar, and then from the Roman calendar to today. Hope you'll find that very interesting and very convincing. And I expect there are plenty of challenges in the comments there and plenty of help. I can't say I did that work all by myself. I may have initiated it and instigated it, but my listeners and the readers of my blog there at crosstheborder.org or nicholasarthur.wordpress.com helped me with that. We refined it over a number of years until it was pretty much settled about 2013, I think. So, and I haven't been able to refine it any since then, and neither do I want to, because I'm not looking for the exact day and hour of his return, not the week, not the day, not the hour, not even the month. I think if I got the right year, or if I got close to the right year, give or take a year, I think I'm doing well enough, and that's good enough for me. I can't be like some of these prophets of the past. Many people have divined the rapture over the last so many years, and they got it down to the day, but of course they were wrong. And of course, then there were 88 reasons why the rapture must happen in 1988, for all of you that have been around for a while. I have that book in my library. It's a little pamphlet. I kept it as a souvenir. Very exciting at the time, especially for all of us rapturists. Dispensational eschatology was taught to me in my church, and of course I bought into it. Yeah, that was in 1988. And then in 1988 missed, so they came out with a follow-up, Why It Must Happen, 89 Reasons. Another, you know what the 89th reason why it must happen in 1989 was? It's because it didn't happen in 1988, see? Yeah, that, I think that might be a joke, but it's a pretty serious joke if you ask me. Oh, let me check the chat room, see if we got any comers here, any takers of the show. Well, Patrick's in the chat room, and my nearly 1,000 people that I've notified the program is starting this morning are all sleeping in. I don't know. Yes, it's funny to have that many followers and people that you can notify, and I was a little late getting out the notice, but well, okay. If I was going for popularity, I'd be a rapturist or something else. Anyway, good to see you there, Patrick, and far out in the studio, of course, is me. I'm in the studio. I hope everybody likes my brick wall here behind me. I had the Masons come in during the last show. That's a joke, too. Tom Fress was doing a show on masonry. Yeah, actually. So, okay, hey, let's get to our articles here. And speaking of prophecy reality, of course, if you followed me, you know my stand, the historicist stand. And we can go back to Daniel chapter 2 and Nebuchadnezzar's image. I call it the Mystery Babylon image because that's what it is, the Mystery Babylon image. And, of course, the Mystery Babylon image, it tells us about the major powers, the beast powers, that rule the world until Christ returns. And of course, that sixth power that was present with John when he wrote the Revelation was Rome. And then that was Rome pagan, which lasted up till about 300-400 AD thereabouts, when Constantine rose up and he embraced Christianity and made it the official religion of the Roman Empire. And of course, we know that Rome fell to the barbarian hordes, those 10 kingdoms or 10 barbarian kingdoms that came down and conquered Rome and divided it into 10. So you got these 10 horns on the Roman beast. And immediately the Daniel's little horn rises up and he subdues the three nearest horn powers to him because, you know, the Antichrist, he can't have people too infringing on his close on his territory. So he subdued three of those horns and then he ruled the Roman Empire for 1260 years, and you had the Holy Roman Empire under the head, the papacy, the little horn of Daniel. And since then, since the beast was punished under the papal head and suffered punishment since about the turn of the century, that is the turn of the 19th or the 18th, going into the 19th century, early 1800s, late 1700s, you have the breaking up of the Holy Roman Empire. And you'll notice, you go back to Daniel's image, and you'll notice that the clay portion, or the iron portion, is mingled with clay, and it's breaking, it's broken into pieces. This is the effect of the kingdom of God on the Roman beast over so many years, is the continual breaking of the Roman power. It's a breakup of the concentration of power, that concentration of power that Rome and the Vatican and the papacy wielded over the ten-horned beast for 1260 years was very hard fought for Rome, especially during the end. Very hard fought after the Reformation and the infant church gained the ascendancy. And they could not keep it from breaking up. It cost them a lot to fight against it. But that wound has been healed as prophesied. And though the mode of operation for the Antichrist beast power and the little horn power is a little bit different than it was during the 1260-year overt reign, the scripture shows us that during the end that there are three players on the scene that come alongside that beast power and the little horn and help it out. And that is the two-horned earth beast that rises up in the wilderness or out of the earth or the unpopulated area, which we've identified as America. And it's two horns. One is lamb-like, the other speaks as a dragon. So we have this duality, this kind of equal war going on here. And it's very evident today. It's more pronounced than ever it was in my lifetime, and perhaps more pronounced than it has been in 100 years, or definitely since the Civil War. The pronounced division between the lamb-like and the dragon-speaking qualities of this earth beast are so evident today. And people wonder, and they talk about civil war now and things like that. And it's easy to see. And that's really the difference. Where it was under the surface before, it is now on the surface and bubbling very rapidly, and that's what we notice today. But I see no indication from prophecy that one horn of this two-horned earth beast is going to rise higher than the other. They seem to be at the same level throughout, so we can pretty much expect the status quo to the end, even though it be more pronounced at this time. And so that's what we have here. We have this breaking, as hard as the Antichrist tries to consolidate power, we have the opposite force continuing to keep it broken up. And see, Patrick says, yet there is much resistance to the U.S. represented in Revelation. I think that's kind of what I'm talking about. And there's much resistance. Anyway, let's go on to some of our news items here. And let's see, I have this from LouRockwell.com, and you should subscribe. Great articles over there at LouRockwell.com for all of us iconoclasts out here. This article is called Bootleggers and Catholics, The Politics of Open Borders Lobby. Economist Bruce Yandel is known for, among other things, authoring the Bootleggers and Baptists Theory of Government Regulation. The gist of the theory is that many forms of regulation and other types of government intervention persist because of the political clout of one group, the bootleggers, that is only interested in money, and another group, the Baptists, that has some religious or ideological interest in a particular form of government intervention. The bootlegger and Baptist prohibition, where bootleggers supported it because it made the competition, legal alcohol merchants, illegal, whereas Baptist is symbolic language for those who supported prohibition for religious reasons. But this article is Bootleggers and Catholics, so pay attention. In her new book, Open Borders, Inc., Michelle Malkin documents chapter and verse what has to be one of the biggest bootleggers and Baptist operations ever. The coalition of large corporations like Koch Industries, Apple Computer, along with arms of the Catholic Church that seeks to abolish national sovereignty. See, this is an Antichrist project to abolish the national sovereignty of the United States with open borders. The corporate interest is mainly in cheap labor, says Malkin, whereas the rhetoric of the Catholic Church is about compassion for refugees. There's a twist here in Professor Yaddle's theory, however, a twist that probably also exists in many of his other examples. The twist is that although the rhetoric of the Catholic Church is about compassion for the poor, it is not just coincidental that it rakes in hundreds of millions of dollars a year in government grants to administer its refugee settlement and other illegal immigrant programs. And this is because, of course, we know that the Antichrist shadow government is firmly implanted in Washington, D.C., and throughout the governments, and yes, even in the churches of America. The Antichrist and his shadow government, this is the healed head wound at work. That head, which received a wound as it were to death, is completely healed, though it doesn't operate openly and overtly in the same manner that it did during its 1260-year Holy Roman Empire reign. It reigns nonetheless, through its shadow government and operatives worldwide, everywhere, and even in America. And here's a great thing about prophecy and America, is that it is shown that that the dragon side, the dragon horn, never rises up higher than or subdues the lamb-like qualities of the two-horned earth beast. So at least we have an even fighting chance here. You know, and going through history, and I hope everybody's going through history with me for the remainder of the week. And we're going to finish. We're going to do the entire history of the church and history of Protestantism from James A. Wiley. And it's going to take hundreds of segments to do this series, but I hope you're following along and you can see what happens when the dragon power gets higher than liberty and freedom, the lamb-like power in any land. It doesn't mean that we don't have to fight. We still have to fight. And that's another thing you learn from history, that you have to continually fight. You have to continually be vigilant for your liberty and your freedom, your religious liberty and your religious freedom, as well as your civil liberties and freedoms. And those are slipping away, and I don't know how far they'll slip away, but I'll tell you what, I'm going to stand on liberty as long as I can. Many people don't. Many people have opted to volunteer for slavery, and I would say most unwittingly. And even, you know, going through history, I see that many great men of God unwittingly volunteered for some aspects of slavery. But that didn't cost them their salvation. Those were the times they lived in. And that was, and they fought a good fight that God gave them to fight. So, you know, thankfully we're not judged by works, but God judges the thoughts and intents of the heart. And basically, and thank God especially for the blood of Jesus, because it's not our works that we're saved by. We only work because we are saved, because we love Him. We offer our lives to Him as a living sacrifice for His kingdom and for His purpose in the earth and wherever we're living at the time. Whatever we can do for His kingdom, that's what we need to be doing. Anyway, continuing with the article here. The twist is that although the rhetoric of the Catholic Church is about compassion for the poor, it is not just coincidental that it makes hundreds of millions of dollars a year in government grants to administer its refugee resettlement and other illegal immigrant programs. The church also, what a gig, man, you know, for their purposes, they get the government to pay. Yeah, that's, I don't get that. The government is not going to pay me anything. But see, that's what you call fascism. And the Catholic Church loves fascism. They love the loss of liberty. The church also views mass immigration from largely Catholic Latin America as a solution to the catastrophic drop-off in Sunday offerings. It lost some 3 million American Catholics between 2007 and 2015 in light of how it has handled its pedophile scandal. Follow the money is the main theme of Open Borders, Inc. Malkin, a lifelong Catholic, excoriates socialist Pope Francis for his rank hypocrisy in pontificating about the need for open borders in America while being surrounded himself by the gigantic and impenetrable Vatican Wall. The Vatican is the mother of all exclusive gated communities with fortifications and phalanxes around its 109 acres that make Beverly Hills look like Appalachia. Keeping watch at the entrances of the Vatican City are members of the Pontifical Swiss Guard, the 140-man standing army that is staffed by highly trained marksmen. They accompany the Holy Father in all his travels, packing the same personal defense weapons that fire army piercing small caliber rifle rounds used by SEAL Team 6. Vatican City has its own separate police force, which performs border control, armed with a full range of modern weaponry, including Glock pistols and Heckler & Koch and Beretta submachine guns, plus Carbon 15 machine pistols and Heckler & Koch Fabarm shotguns. Oh, it looks like we're coming into a break here. We're going to continue this article when we get back from the break. You're listening to Across the Border. I'm Nicholas Arthur. We'll be back in a few minutes. Don't go anywhere.
Behold God is my salvation. I will trust, I will not be afraid. Behold, God is my strength.
Hear it first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net.
The book of Revelation says, "The spirit of prophecy is the testimony of Jesus Christ." This is at the very heart of FirstAmendmentRadio.com. In that spirit, we have created the Prophecy Reality News app for all of your mobile devices, streaming First Amendment Radio 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Available for your Apple, Android device, and smartphone absolutely free. Get the Prophecy Reality News app installed today, so you can listen to First Amendment Radio wherever you are. The Prophecy Reality News app. Get it now.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
The program you are listening to is 100% sponsored by you, the listener, on this First Amendment Rights Media channel. You will notice that there are few commercials on this radio network. There's a good reason for that. Corporate advertising dollars come with strings that limit program content. So without your help, these programs cannot continue on satellite, internet, or our several affiliates. If you benefit by the educational law programs, we ask you to give. If you are admonished or nurtured by the Bible and ministry programs, we ask you to give. If some voice a cause that you are passionate about, we ask you to give. If you believe in any of these, we ask you to support them as you would a missionary on a continual basis, as if giving a tithe for missionary radio. These programs are not commercially viable and must be supported by those faithful to the cause of truth. Look for the button to sponsor your favorite programs at our listen and schedule pages on the internet. We will also give you unlimited archive access to all of our programs. We're asking you to give much less than a tithe so that you may also send support directly to a particular program host, cause, and anywhere else the Spirit may lead you. Do all to the glory of our God and Creator, for His holy nation, the only kingdom that will last forever. Thank you for listening.
Back, you're listening to Cross the Border. It's another Prophecy Reality Edition. Shout out to all those few people that have showed up in the chat room. Okay, and we're talking about bootleggers and Catholics, an article that is posted at lewrockwell.com. There's nothing wrong with showing compassion to immigrants, writes Malkin, but what the Catholic Church is involved in is supporting the systematic undermining of an orderly immigration and entrance system that imposes limits, eligibility requirements, criminal background checks, medical screening, and a commitment to assimilation. Government showers taxpayer dollars on the Catholic Church's myriad open borders bureaucracies, bringing not a peep of protest from the usual leftist hysterics demanding a wall of separation between church and state. One program alone for migration and refugee services and run by the Catholic bishops gets 59% of its revenue from government grants. It collected $534 million in taxpayer dollars from 2008 to 2017, writes Malkin. Although it's a nonprofit 501c3 organization, it spends much of its time hurling insults at any and all elected officials who seek to enforce federal immigration laws. The open borders business of the Catholic Church, says Malkin, is about cold, hard cash. And I wish it was that simple, but it's not. It's not simply about cold, hard cash, although cold, hard cash is what motivates many of the people involved. But for the Antichrist and his shadow government, it's about Catholicizing America. And you know, what are we supposed to do, us few Protestants out here? What are we supposed to do about it? Well, I'll tell you what, the only thing we can do about it, one, you can do whatever civil protesting and voting and making all the stands against that. But at the same time, you know, when you meet up with these immigrants that come to our country, we preach the gospel to them. Yeah, if we can, you know, why not? And you'll see from the next article that it looks like I'm going to have to cover in the next hour. We have some things about to say about American Catholics. And I don't think the Pope is very happy with them. But anyway, you'll see, because I'm going to read a Catholic, well, this girl, Michelle Malkin, this lady here that's writing the article we're commenting on, she's a Catholic too. Yeah, these are rebellious Catholics, so the Pope would definitely think. And going through like the history of Bohemia, what a history, you know, the Huss and Jerome in Bohemia started a whole thing, and they were martyred, and that pretty much, but anyway, in the end, you have the Catholics joining up with the Protestants to fight the Pope and the hordes he's bringing against their country, because that's what they should do. I mean, their land is being invaded, but in the end, that's how it turned out. And it's a good history. So, and you can listen to that history. I'm going through it the rest of the week during my Cross the Border broadcasts. So very interesting history, and I hope that everyone's following that. Okay, Malkin writes of how Barack Obama got his start in politics after leaving Harvard Law School. Of course, he got an alien degree or something, or that only aliens could. Non-American citizens could apply for. Anyway, we won't go there. That's all been hashed out in history for all the good it's done us. And I could make more comments about that. He worked for the disgraced and now defunct ACORN, Association of Community Organizations for Reform Now. ACORN was big league spouter of Marxist rhetoric to justify its actions, which is probably what attracted Obama to it. It specialized in things as threatening to cry racism unless banks gave it, ACORN, and not any alleged victims of racism, millions or tens of millions of dollars. It did so by making use of the Carter-era Community Reinvestment Act, which gave community organizations the ability to protest to the Fed and endlessly delay a proposed bank merger or new branch opening unless the bank could prove that it was not practicing or lending discrimination. Typically, the complaint would be withdrawn as soon as ACORN got the cash. So here's more shadow government operations for the Antichrist going on in our midst. Regardless whether ACORN got the cash, regardless of whether any study of discrimination was completed. As soon as they got the cash, the complaint was withdrawn and they got their license to open a bank or whatever. It was essentially an extortion racket that raked in billions over the years. Malkin quotes Obama as explaining how he worked hand in hand with the Catholic Campaign for Human Development while with ACORN. And I remember when, Obama published his tax returns. You could see that the only charity he gave to was, wait for it, of course, Catholic Charities. It's all public. You can look it up yourself even now. I'm sure there's still pictures of his tax returns out there on the web that you can actually look at and see where he gave his money. The campaign gave Acorn $7.3 million before it was forced out of business after a prostitution smuggling ring it was apparently running was exposed on video by Project Veritas. Yes, Project Veritas, that were good people over there. So Catholic Charities is the big kahuna of government-funded open borders activism, receiving 98% of its budget in 2012 from government grants. 98%! You know how much of my budget I get from government grants? A minus. Minus percent. Because I have to pay property taxes. So, and I get absolutely nothing from the government. Yes, for the past several decades, it has received on average about 60% of its revenue from government grants with an annual budget over $1 billion. Sorry, not $100 billion, $1 billion. 57 government agencies fund Catholic Charities, Malkin reports. Boy, when you can spread it out that far and wide, nobody gets a bullseye painted on them. See, that's how a shadow government should be operated, that nobody can put a bullseye on anything. You got it spread over 57 government agencies funding Catholic Charities. Man, I'll tell you what, that shadow government for the Antichrist, there's a lot to be admired there in the way that they accomplish things and get things done. Yes, they put us to shame. That's why Jesus said, be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. They do a lot of harm, don't they? And that's what limits us. If we can do anything, as be wise as serpents, but the credo is do no harm. And where if we have to do harm, that's where we have to stop. That's our Christian credo. Going off of that maxim from Jesus there, to be wise as serpents, but harmless as doves. Okay, continuing with the article here. Malkin includes a chapter on the left's hate machine, the Southern Poverty Law Center, which does nothing for poverty and practices almost no law. The role of the SPLC in all of this, as with all other issues, is to smear any and all dissenters to its radical Bolshevik-style leftism as haters and extremists. When the American Enterprise Institute sponsored a debate by two academics on the issue of immigration, for example, the SPLC condemned the institution for mainstreaming hate, arguing for enforcement of immigration laws that Congress has passed and presidents have signed is apparently the same as being a member of the KKK and burning a cross in the front yard of a black family, according to the SPLC, or they would like what one commentator calls the low information voters of America to believe. Malkin documents many examples of this guilt by association smear. For example, they will find some genuinely crazy sounding misfit who no one ever heard of, who rants and raves on the internet. He will then be placed in their official list of immigrant haters and extremists, along with, say, Senator Ted Cruz, Lou Dobbs, Michelle Malcolm, implying that they are all birds of the feather and equally threatening to society. Looming over all this is George Soros, who doesn't really fit in with the bootleggers and Baptist theme, despite being a wealthy businessman. Malkin documents the millions of dollars he spends annually on facilitating illegal immigration around the world, while at the same time quoting Soros' utopian rhetoric about his dream of world government, presumably run by himself and his ideological cronies. In other words, Soros is more like one of the Dr. Evil characters plotting world dominion on domination in a James Bond movie. And so there you have it. That's how the Antichrist works. And how many people are unwittingly, it's like you look at them, That'll be our next article that I want to jump into. Anyway, let me check the chat room, see if we have any comments, questions. Right now would be a great time if anyone wants to call in. See, Arab Spring. I don't know anything about Arab Spring. Someone put that in the chat room. It's a question mark. And, yeah, well, you know, it's just the Antichrist at work in other countries. And, you know, the whole Arab or Islamic invasion of Western Europe, that's all the Antichrist doing. Anything to dilute, you know. I mean, Islam is a weapon of the Vatican. Islam was created by the Vatican. It was nurtured by the Vatican, brought to power by the Vatican as a useful tool. And, you know, that it's grown into, you know, kind of out of control doesn't really matter, because anything but Bible-believing Protestantism, that's what they hate. That's what the Counter-Reformation is all about. Anything to put it down, because it is the only thing. You know, the Word of God is the thing they hate. And so anything but that, the dilution of the morals of any society, that anything that will lead to its downfall and so that it'll fall into the hands of the Antichrist, that's what he's after. That's what history shows. That's why history is so important, and why I've decided to spend so much time on history during my broadcast now. And so we're going to continue that until we get through at least James A. Wiley's History of Protestantism. And we're barely through it. Believe me, we're like only not even halfway through the first volume. Let's see, wonderful humor today, though it isn't a laughing matter. Well, always like to keep things light. Okay, what else do we got going on here? Not a whole lot of participation here in the chat room. I was hoping to have Patrick on one of these days for a segment at least. He wrote a great article. I have it here somewhere. Here it is. It was a Jesuit research article. That was pretty good. I enjoyed that. I read every word of it. I read a lot. Believe me. I spend probably half of my waking hours reading and writing. I have to admit both there. So, but it's something that is that keeps you alive, you know, keeps your mind vibrant and alive. So everyone should be picking up books and reading. And I've got a great selection at firstamendmentradio.com and crosstheborder.org. So you should pick up some of those there. And there's a lot of free books. You can go to my Bible studies page. Everyone should read for their own information. F. Tupper Saucy's Rulers of Evil. Definitely something, a very suppressed book by the shadow government. Doesn't like anything that exposes them to the light of day. Well, let me reach for this phone here. Okay. Your name and where you're calling from, you're on the air. Hello? Okay. Cannot hear you. Okay, that's... All right, well, maybe we'll try that again. I've still got 10 minutes or 5 or 10 minutes left in this broadcast. All I got was a partial word out of that phone call. Where was I? Huh. Completely blew my train of thought, whatever it was. Okay, our next the next article I'm going to come up here is from a National Catholic newspaper established in 1967 called The Remnant. And they aren't very happy with the papal chair. I would liken these remnant to the remnant that joined the Protestants in their fight at the end of the Bohemian insurrection, I guess we could call it the Bohemian insurrection, the Hussite wars that sprung up, and toward the end where the Catholics actually joined when they were being invaded by a Catholic crusade at the end there. What a history, man. All I can tell you is just a wonderful history to read, that how a nation came together and stood against tyranny. And, man, just heroes after heroes there. You have, of course, Huss and Drome, who started it and were martyred. And then Ziska and Procopius, those people who led the fight after the martyrdom of those great reformers of their nation. Okay, well, I guess no phone calls. Let's see. Push another button over here and see. Let's see, reconnecting. My Skype is not working. There it says reconnecting. There's a poor network connection. Hey, am I going out on the air? Okay, let me check the chat room, see if I get any. Everybody hearing me good out there? Looks like everything's working right. Yeah, I don't know about Skype, man. Oh, looks like Patrick Nash tried to Skype in. Accept. Okay, I accepted him. Oh, I should have said the last name. I don't even know if that's their full last name. But that's what it says on the Skype machine there. Anyway, like I said, it's hard for me to... that's on another computer over there. But I can press the button to join someone in, and then I have to go to another screen to push up the volume for the... anyway, one of these days I'll get it. That's why I like to plan these. Like if Patrick was going to be my guest, I would plan it beforehand and have him on and ready to go so that I wouldn't have to fiddle with that during the broadcast. Actually, I would move Skype over to this live production computer where I do my live broadcast for this show, if I was going to do that. Anyway, thanks for trying to call in, Patrick. I appreciate that. But like I said, you can see the difficulty I have. I can take the calls. I don't know why I lost you on the phone call there. That usually doesn't happen. But Skype, I have to pretty much know beforehand anyway. It's a lot of technology, man, and to try to operate while you're doing a live broadcast and everything. Anyway, looks like I'm going to have to wrap up this hour, and next hour I'm going to jump into this other article. Might as well do the whole broadcast live today and save the history for the rest of the week, since that's the way it's turning out. Okay, go to my website. He says I was, yeah, I know you, you're already hooked up. He says I was able to hear you on both. Can I try back? Yeah, you can try back on either one right now, this minute. Except we have 2 minutes left, so you might want to come in early or after the news for the next hour. That would be fine. That would be great. And I could hook you up, but I couldn't talk to you. You would just hear what's on the air, because that's all you're hearing is what's on the air. But once you join me on the air, you hear me and we can talk. So that's the way it works. Unless you call on the phone, then I can talk to you during off air. Okay, anyway, go to crosstheborder.org or nicholasarthur.wordpress.com. Make sure you subscribe to my blog there. That way I can notify you of any broadcasts or new postings that I post on my blog. I'd appreciate that. And if you're giving your money to, what's his name? Any of those other apostate ministries out there, please stop and consider supporting FirstAmendmentRadio.net or .com. We really do need your money. If you want to give a substantial amount every month, we would prefer to receive that by check rather than continuing to enrich PayPal. Plus that, when PayPal cuts us off, because that'll probably happen one day, we'll get deplatformed by PayPal, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook. Eventually it's going to happen because, you know, that's the way it works. But until then, we'll keep using those platforms. We'll use every platform we can. But I guess they could even shut down our bank account. Yeah. And so we couldn't even receive checks. Then people would have to send us silver and gold. Anyway, you get the idea. We need your support, and whatever, by whatever means you can get it to us, because we are very poor when it comes to cash and money. We certainly don't have what many other ministries and other alternative media have out there selling products. You know, where's my product selling staff? I say I'd have to do that too if I was going to sell products, and I certainly have just barely enough time with the help of my daughter, my limited staff, to do the things that I'm doing here already. But we do need to eat, pay the bills, and it would be nice if we had money to actually expand and add other people here to help out in the ministry. Very much needed. So invest your kingdom dollars here, and you will reap your reward in eternity in the kingdom of God. So that's all I can say about that. And I'll leave that up to between you and the Almighty. Yeah. Okay, anything else? I think I'm about out of time here. And Yeah, I don't want to start anything else. Let's see, what else have we got going on here? Check out the posts on my website. Share them on your social media. Make sure you put our Prophecy Reality News app on your smartphone. And if you have the iPhone, you can go to firstamendmentradio.net and click on the, what is that page? I got to look at that to even remember how it works. Yes, you go to First Amendment Radio, and that's not it. Oh, there it is. That's the button. And you press on the mobile page there, and then you'll get our mobile page. And then save that, save a link to it on your surface of your smartphone or whatever, your iPad or whatever. That way you always have a click link to our mobile page, because we don't have an Apple app anymore, because Apple decided that they would charge us $100 a year to have a web page available on their devices. But you can do it that way. You can go to our mobile page and put a link on your Surface. Okay, we'll come back after the news. We'll see you then.
First on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net. American Family News on the Hour. I'm Chad Groening. The New Hampshire primary has Senator Bernie Sanders as the projected winner in the state, with Pete Buttigieg trailing behind him in a close second, and Senator Amy Klobuchar with a shocking boost in front of Senator Elizabeth Warren. And Fox's Griff Jenkins has more on what this means for former Vice President Joe Biden.
The other big story, how poorly the establishment candidate, former Vice President Joe Biden, did. He fled here to South Carolina early. He says he's banking on African-American support. Here is what he says.
All right, come from, that's the opening bell. Not the closing bell.
And two dropped out. Andrew Yang, the Yang Gang, said goodbye along with Senator Michael Bennett. Now things move to Nevada, February 22nd, where they have a caucus. Then a week later, South Carolina, where, of course, Joe Biden looks to perhaps try and resuscitate a struggling campaign. It's worth noting, no Democrat has ever won the Democrat nomination without winning either Iowa or New Hampshire.
Combining with the totals from Iowa, Sanders now has 21 delegates and Buttigieg has 23. And the Republicans also had a primary of their own. Fox's Todd Pirro tells us more about President Trump's easy victory in the state.
President Trump with more than 85% of the primary votes. Bill Weld, less than 13,000 votes. Trump 2020 campaign manager Brad Parscale's statement reading in part, quote, his vote percentage will also show historic strength when the numbers are final, who were successfully reelected. Parscale adding that President Trump will crush whoever the Democratic nominee is.
President Trump took to Twitter to comment on the race and targeted former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg in an earlier appearance. These days, it may seem as though consumers cannot find a retail store that does not support left-leaning issues and programs. But AFN's Chris Woodward spoke to someone who does offer an alternative.
Dr. David L. Black of Second Vote, a conservative watchdog for corporate activism, recommends people shop locally.
Shop with the people that you go to church with or that you are in Rotary clubs with, or your local organizations. But shop locally, keep your dollars in your community. One of the ways in which we describe this is kind of like your tax dollar. The further it's removed from your community, the more it engages in behavior that you would not agree with. Dollars go off to Washington, D.C., and then we're dictated from Washington, D.C. on what we should do locally. Well, that happens, too, when your dollars go off to these big box corporations. And the big corporations dominate the conversation, but there are tens of thousands of small businesses in America that are run by people of strong faith that are conservative and Christian.
Black admits it's not always easy. Shoppers do have their individual buying habits and preferences. Still, Second Vote continues its effort to educate consumers on where various companies stand on issues.
Second Vote for 9 years has been focused on retail dollars and donated dollars, trying to educate people on how this is structured and to, whenever possible, stop putting your dollars into basically the offering plate to these radical efforts.
I'm Chris Woodward.
Indiana is considering legislation to make sure any aborted baby can receive burial or cremation. AFN's Charlie Butts has more.
Indiana State Senator Elizabeth Brown has submitted the bill, and she tells AFN the state passed a bill requiring the two methods of dealing with aborted children 3 years ago, but her bill simply provides the mechanism to implement it.
In terms of exactly what requirements will be placed upon the abortion clinics, the type of forms they will need to supply the Department of Health, so that the Department of Health will then be able to implement guidelines and actually enforce it.
Even women who go through chemical abortions at home will be able to avail themselves of the services.
We are making sure that women understand, regardless of the type of abortion they select, that A, they will be informed this is an option, and B, they will also understand they're the ones making the choice in terms of where they would like their babies remain interred or cremated.
If they do not make a choice, the abortuary will still have the responsibility, and the clinic will bear the cost, which is minimal. I'm Charlie Butts.
And that is American Family News on the Hour. I'm Chad Groening.
Hear it first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net.
Thank you.
listen across the border. It's a Prophecy Reality Edition. We're live on a Wednesday morning going into our second hour here. I'm waiting for Patrick to Skype in. It's on. If you get on there and you can hear me, just say something and I will hear you because I have the volume up and should be able to hear you. Yep. So, anyway, that's the way that works. If it works, we'll see. The Remnant, that's right, the Vatican Caucus. You ever hear that? We had here the caucus in New Hampshire, and then they had the one before that, and was it Vermont? One of those other little states over there. That total failure. Well, the Vatican Caucus is gearing up to defeat Donald Trump as they promote their socialist darling, Bernie Sanders. Can you believe that? Yeah, it's not the Russian collusion. It's not the Russians that are interfering. It's the Antichrist. I'd like to see the Democrats. Oh, wait a minute. They're colluding with them. Okay, it's 2016 all over again, says this article from The Remnant. Francis is gearing up for the 2020 Vatican Caucus. The campaign is now underway. The Bernie supporters are firmly ensconced. The Pope's political proxies are issuing statements trashing Donald Trump. Weird. Keep hearing weird noises. Let me see something here. Oh, yeah. Can you hear me, Patrick? Boy, oh, boy.
Yes, I can.
Oh, now I can hear you. How about that? Hey, actually, the technology works. Okay, well, let's do this, and I'll cover the article after we talk. How about that?
Sounds like a winner.
Okay. Anyway, really appreciated you contacting me. Patrick is a listener, and so we're going to see what Patrick has to say. Now, some years ago, you had a little problem with your church. You got kicked out of the church or were forced to leave because you wouldn't go along with dispensational eschatology. Is that correct?
Yes, it is correct, but it was more recent than that. Actually, at the end of January this year is when that occurred.
Oh, okay. Well, why don't you tell me how that all started and came about? Go back to the beginning.
Back to the beginning. Well, I left Methodism back in 2017 after discovering their affiliation with the National Council of Churches. After leaving the Methodist Church and seeking out another congregation, I came up empty-handed in my hometown. It was hard to find a church that wasn't a 501c3. At that time, I still was under the auspices of futurist eschatology, so that wasn't even a concern. But I tried a number of churches and called to several other ones trying to find a good fit. And so many of them are tied to national conferences, and it's difficult to know where your support and where the congregation support is going and what have you. So I ended up affiliating with a church online that was not a 501c3. They were almost a King James only church, operated in the gifts of the Holy Spirit. And after attending online faithfully for a number of months, they announced that they were going to begin a ministry school. And I applied to that ministry school, and I was accepted. I was kind of surprised by that, but I went for a four-day conference and orientation. It's about 5 hours away from me, so my extended church family, I got to meet them and interact with the staff, and that was all great. I took, this would have been in the fall of 2018, I took their full boat of classes that they offered. So I had four ministry school classes in that fall semester of 2018 and 2019. I only took one course, which was eschatology.
Okay.
And as a part of that course requirement, we had to do a research paper. We had 10 topics to choose from, and I happened to have chosen to focus on the Jesuits.
I'm really surprised that they had the Jesuits as one of the topics available.
Actually, there were pretty risque topics like Kabbalah, Freemasonry. I think the Pope himself was one of the topics. So the church was kind of cutting edge and trying to expose deceptions within the church and within the world and the movement towards the New World Order and all that sort of thing. So,
yeah, but Patrick, you may have gone a little too far. Go ahead, continue on with the narration.
Okay. Well, in researching the Jesuits, I came to find their eschatological tampering that took place back in the late 1500s, early 1600s. And my research paper that you mentioned earlier that you had read, in there I outlined some of the things that they had done, like tampering with the divine time measure and rubber banding Daniel's 70th week to 2,000 years hence. And all that didn't sit well with me. So as part of my research paper, I had questioned how the futurist school could justify, or, you know, by what authority did they adjust the divine time measure. So I never got an answer. There was about an 8 or 9 month gap in between. And
okay, well, bookmark that thought there. You were waiting, yes, 8 month in between. And do you mind if I put a link in the chat room to your paper, research paper?
Oh, I would love that.
Okay, well, I'm going to do that then. Okay, go ahead and continue then.
Okay. So I waited, being under the auspices of spiritual authority, which happened to be one of the four courses that I took in my first semester. Our study was Watchman Nee's Spiritual Authority. You're probably familiar with that book. And I waited, but before the February 4th start date of the semester, what would have been my last semester, to finish up my final two courses out of the total seven that they offered, I reiterated the questions that I had asked in my Jesuit research paper. And the response was not real good. I rated it as emotional, and they couldn't provide any justification for altering the divine time measure and what have you. And there was a little conversation back and forth between myself and the pastor instructor, and it resulted in them cutting me off from the congregation, removing me from the school. So it was an online congregation that you had YouTube and Facebook as options for attending. There were also, I think, three other Facebook pages that were associated with the church family, and I was blocked and removed from all of those.
Wow.
Yeah, and when I discovered the Jesuit tampering originally, I thought, man, this all of our lives, this is all I've ever known. We've always been taught the futurist eschatology, and everybody's waiting for the man of sin to be revealed and the third temple to be built. And
well, you know, I did like the way you put that they're tampering with the divine timeline given in the scripture. That's a pretty distinct way of putting it, because that's exactly what they have done.
It is. Yeah, that's given in, I believe, Numbers 4:4, and there's also an Ezekiel passage. I forget the chapter and verse. You might recall it right off.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and definitely Daniel's 70 weeks timeline.
Right.
Putting a gap in there.
Well, and the changing of the year-day principle, which the Reformation fathers and true Christians like the Huguenots and the Waldensians before them, they were firm in the year day principle. And now the futurists take in Revelation, they change the year day to a day day principle, which right. By what authority do they do that as well? So there's a lot of holes in the futurist. And after studying for the last 8 or 9 months, I just felt like it was my duty to point it out. And I was hoping, being that they were cutting edge and pointing out deceptions, that they would embrace the opportunity and enlist our kingdom workers to bring that deception to the fore. So that
do you think that perhaps when they put the Pope and the Jesuits as potential articles of interest, that they were actually hoping that you would find something good to say about them?
Not necessarily, no.
But because, I mean, for them to excoriate you and excommunicate you because you actually did look into those things and come to the conclusions you came to, just seems beyond the pale, man.
It really does. It makes me think of the term gatekeeper. I hate to say that because there's a lot of good doctrine, a lot of good Bible taught there. I wouldn't have been there otherwise. But when it came to this one particular thing, he's a 30-year veteran, fivefold minister. So, you know, who am I, the student, to question what the instructor has to say?
Well, perhaps he wanted you to come to no greater conclusion about the Jesuits, say, than perhaps Alex Jones has come to.
Yes, yeah, that's it's very interesting.
Yeah, and other gatekeepers.
Yes, I only scratched the surface with my research paper. Yeah. I'm sure that easily 10 times that amount could come to the fore. And they were pioneers in the vein of Aristotle in so many different fields of science, electromagnetism, optics, astronomy, genetics. And even it was George Lemaître, I guess is how you say it. Lemaître is what it looks like.
It is true.
Big Bang, cosmic egg, in conjunction with Albert Einstein and the theory of relativity.
Yeah, there are very, very many, many talented people caught up in Jesuitism and Catholicism. We can't deny that there are people of great talent working for the enemy.
Well, they were proponents of what I like to think of as a proper education. So they took over the educational system. There are so many secondary schools and colleges and universities, over 30 of them in the United States alone, that are Jesuit institutions.
Yes. And so pretty much their influence is in every... It seems like every educational institution in America, or practically every, from the public schools to even most of the seminaries that are not Jesuit, have been influenced by them.
Yeah, another thing that I had researched, not really in conjunction with any assignment, but having discovered the National Council of Churches and the Methodist organizations, they were involved in the founding of the National Council of Churches back in the early 1900s. And that's part of the seminaries being undermined.
Right.
Anytime
you see a consolidation of power like that, like the National Council of Churches, it's for the Antichrist. You'll find the Antichrist and his shadow operatives behind it and all in it, because that's what the Antichrist loves, the consolidation and concentration of power. That's why he wants people like Bernie Sanders in office so badly, why he hates Donald Trump. Even though Donald Trump is no great president, as far as I'm concerned, he's not really a great man as far as great men go. But he's doing some things, but he's very deluded himself because he believes he hates socialism, but he's very socialist himself. Most people in America are under the delusion that they're not socialists, especially, I mean, speaking for the conservative side, but while at the same time they're all walking around as card-carrying members of the most socialist administration on the face of the earth, and that is the Social Security Administration. I mean, if you signed up for that, you signed up for socialism, and that's undeniable, yet everyone's in denial about it.
It's ties back to admiralty law and your birth certificate, and you're not a free person. You're a bonded servant to the national debt, and that's the whole other ball of wax, but that is something that I am working into now.
Yeah, there's a whole lot underlying it. They do take care of the details, do they not?
You need a Black's Law dictionary to be able to fish through.
Definitely. Anything else? Anything else that you can do to shed light on the situation you've been through, what you're into, and what's happened to you?
Well, I feel a little adrift, but I would like to put my allegiance behind those who are proponents of the truth and bring to as many people's attention that I can that their futurism that they're so dearly holding on to is going to lead them astray.
Well,
and
it is counter-reformation eschatology. That's what it is, straight out of the Council of Trent so many hundreds of years ago.
Yeah, but it's been reinforced by Schofield and Darby and Larkin and so many in between that the indoctrination is very deep. So I don't know what the trick will be to getting people to open their eyes to it. You have any suggestions?
Well, my suggestion is to do what we're doing, you know, and to support the people that are, you know, working at it. And that's all I can do.
You do great work, and I think I may have mentioned in some of our online communications that I had watched on YouTube Robert Karangola from Tulsa, Oklahoma, and he has a very well thought out, concise, methodical approach to explaining the problems and then what the realities
yeah,
are.
Yeah, I've watched his entire series, and He's one of the few amillennialists that turn you to E.B. Eliot, okay?
Okay.
And even though he holds up E.B. Eliot, unfortunately, he buys into the amillennialism rather than the premillennialism that E.B. Eliot espoused. So, but anyway, and I read his book too. What was it on the Daniel's 927, the 70th week.
I was thinking it might have been entitled 70 weeks. But
yeah, that's the one, 70 weeks. He wrote back in the 1980s. And the only problem I had with his book is that he used way too much conjecture, you know, to establish his case. But I guess he was going against a overly, completely conjectured case of dispensationalism of the day. So, but he used a lot of conjecture. And I try to stay away from conjecture myself in establishing my case for historic eschatology, because I don't like to take a rule, you know, out of their playbook, the dispensational playbook, because their whole thesis is established on conjecture completely. That's all they have. Is hypotheses and conjecture, and studying into amillennialism, which I've been doing. I've been writing several of the standard works on amillennialism, and they have nothing either, except for hypotheses and conjecture. And so it's founded on the same foundation of dispensationalism. So you're not going to convert any dispensationalism using their rule book. You know, I don't think so anyway. And then another thing I discovered is just going off here on the topic is that, wasn't able to follow that train of thought out. I'm having a teenage moment here.
Some people call it squirrels.
Yeah.
I ascribe to premillennialism, and I'm in agreement with you in that the 7,000-day year is upcoming. And I kind of wondered if the 120th Jubilee in 2045 might be worth taking a look at. Also, the September 23rd, 2017 celestial star alignment, from my understanding, that recurs on 2,000-year cycles.
Yeah, and I've addressed that in the past. That's using astrology, or astronomy, I should say, to interpret the scripture, and that's not what we do. Yeah, that's not a valid interpretation for the Revelation, and especially that chapter. And oh, the other thought that I lost there was that, you know, the dispensationalists, they love to say that they are the literalists, but it's a smokescreen because they are anything but literalists. Okay, because if they were literalists, then they would take the 70 weeks, the 490 years, as literal, contiguous 490 years, but they're not literalists. You know, I had one so-called dispensational literalist say, oh, I take the Bible literally, and then he espoused how that the grasshoppers, or the locusts that had tails and stingings and all that stuff. He says, see, those are helicopters. And I said, no, that's not taking the Bible literally. You know,
right.
Those are actually locusts if you're going to take it literally. So they're not literalists either. It's just a smokescreen that they've learned to use and to make a claim. And then they add that to the, like a badge that they wear. I'm a literalist and you're not. But they're no more literalist than anyone else. They're only literalists where it serves them and where it doesn't serve them, as in the 70 weeks of Daniel being literal and contiguous. Well, then, you know, they violate the divine timeline, literally. So,
yes.
And yeah, so they're not, they can't stand on that. But they do anyway.
Well, I do look forward to partnering with you, and you have my contact information if there's something that you would like to put me to task on or anything of that nature, let me know. My schedule will intensify as the growing season comes along, as we consider ourselves organic and large gardeners. So, looking forward to getting in the ground. We've only had 17 inches of rain since the beginning of the year, so I'm a little concerned about that at the moment.
Yeah, well, I wish I had that concern over here. I just planted a bunch of hay, and it looks like it might die.
We'll pray for you some rain.
Yeah, that would be nice. It seems like we're entering into a drought, but I'm hoping for some latter rain here because our rainy season is coming into the last of it. So hopefully we'll get some. Okay, well, thank you so much, Patrick. I appreciate you spending a little time with me on the air. We'll be in touch, okay?
Great. Bye-bye.
Okay. All right. You're listening to Cross the Border, and we're going to come back after some messages and continue the broadcast. Don't go anywhere.
First on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net.
The program you are listening to is 100% sponsored by you, the listener, on this First Amendment Rights Media channel. You will notice that there are few commercials on this radio network. There's a good reason for that. Corporate advertising dollars come with strings that limit program content. So without your help, these programs cannot continue on satellite, internet, or our several affiliates. If you benefit by the educational law programs, we ask you to give. If you are admonished or nurtured by the Bible and ministry programs, we ask you to give. If some voice a cause that you are passionate about, we ask you to give. If you believe in any of these, we ask you to support them as you would a missionary on a continual basis, as if giving a tithe for Missionary Radio. These programs are not commercially viable and must be supported by those faithful to the cause of truth. Look for the button to sponsor your favorite programs at our listen and schedule pages on the internet. We will also give you unlimited archive access to all of our programs. We're asking you to give much less than a tithe so that you may also send support directly to a particular program host, cause, and anywhere else the Spirit may lead you. Do all to the glory of our God and Creator, for His holy nation, the only kingdom that will last forever. Thank you for listening.
Since the beginning of time, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, it has been borrowed, it has been purchased, it has been stolen. There's a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188 or visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, right here on FirstAmendmentRadio.com at 4 p.m. Eastern or 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, 1-800-375-4188.
The book of Revelation says, the spirit of prophecy is the testimony of Jesus Christ. This is at the very heart of FirstAmendmentRadio.com. In that spirit, we have created the Prophecy Reality News app for all of your mobile devices, streaming First Amendment Radio 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Available for your Apple, Android device, and smartphone absolutely free. Get the Prophecy Reality News app installed today, so you can listen to First Amendment Radio wherever you are. The Prophecy Reality News app. Get it now.
Welcome back. You're listening Across the Border. It's our Prophecy Reality Edition. And in this segment, I'm going to jump into this article here. And that is the Vatican Caucus. Francis is gearing up for the 2020 Vatican Caucus. That's our Antichrist, Pope Francis. The campaign is now underway. The Bernie supporters are firmly ensconced. The Pope's political proxies are issuing statements trashing Donald Trump. The papal bully pulpit is now primed for political warfare. American Catholics, gird yourselves for the continuing onslaught of America's most pro-life president by none other than the Holy See. Now, this is a Catholic article addressed to Catholics. And, of course, to the Antichrist himself, they would be rebellious Catholics because they're upbraiding their most holy father, are they not? Continuing, this is just the first round of a Vatican full-scale assault on the Trump administration. Move over Nancy Pelosi. She is Catholic, and she is doing the Pope's bidding, after all. The Bergoglian henchmen are ready to rip on Trump. They will make the 2016 campaign look like a romp in the Vatican Gardens. Remember the tumultuous 2016 election? Lest we forget, socialist Bergoglio rolled out of the Vatican red carpet in white smoke for Comrade Bernie during the 2016 Democratic primary. The Sanders Vatican visit and speech was orchestrated, no doubt, at the behest of the Vatican's UN handler, pro-abort Jeffrey Sachs, who also doubles as both Sanders and Bergoglio's economic and environmental consultant. And here I just have to add, the Catholics hold themselves out, and, you know, these, of course, rebellious Catholics that I'm quoting here, they're the true believers. They are the true pro-life Catholics. They believe in their heart that all life is sacred and created in the image of God, that every baby is and every human being, born and unborn, are created in the image of God and are have that sacred image of their Creator on them. Not so with the Antichrist and all of those Satan worshipers over in the Vatican, in the hierarchy of the Catholic Church, and of course the shadow government. Not so. They wear the cloak of the Bible. They wear the cloak of pro-life, but they're only pro-life as so far as it helps their cause, because they, in history, would take the babies of Protestants and dash them against the rocks and murder their families and pregnant women and babies. They were indiscriminate in their slaughter during their crusades against Bible-believing Protestants. Okay? So they are pro-abortion. They are so-called pro-rights, or whatever you call it, pro-abortion rights, except for Catholics. And tell you that throughout history, they've treated rebellious Catholics, like the people writing this article here, these Catholics writing this article, they treated them the same. They just put them in the same lot with those people, with the Protestants, when they came in. Anyone who helped or lent any aid or quarter to a Protestant of the Catholics were considered rebellious and treated in the same way. And many Catholics gave their lives in the same cause as Protestants. In heart, they were truly Protestants. And many of them, I would believe, went on to eternal life. Continuing here. Yet when Hillary stole the nomination from Bernie, the Vatican operatives quickly shifted strategies and coordinated with the Clinton campaign to defeat Donald Trump. The Vatican coordinated election campaign messaging with Clinton operatives, as revealed by the John Podesta campaign email leaks. Even the uber political Francis jumped into presidential political campaign. He couldn't resist taking his own cheap shot at Trump with his globalist dogma that it is unchristian to build walls, said he, from behind the Vatican's 39-foot impenetrable wall. Where is the 2020 Vatican caucus being held? Look no further than the Vatican's Pontifical Academy of Social Sciences, orchestrated by its party boss, Bishop Marcello. China is the best implementer of Catholic social doctrine, Sarando. Together with the Pope's personal global political operative, Jeffrey Sachs, the past serves as a satellite office for the UN globalist agenda. If ever there was an enemy of globalism and its population control agenda, it is Donald J. Trump, according to the Vatican. President Trump's withdrawals from the withdrawals from the Paris Climate Treaty, the Iran nuclear deal, the Cuba detente, and his first America First populism agenda rank up there with King Herod's deadly sins. Oh, wait. Francis did obliquely refer to Trump as King Herod, who slaughtered young boys. The papal vitriol aimed at Trump populism is not surprising, since Francis admonished us all to obey the United Nations globalists. Wake up, Catholics, to the Neo-Pacamena Church, which innovates weekly according to the globalist whim of Francis, who now invents his new eco-sins with a secular God to obey. Bless me, Father, I forgot to recycle on Monday. I didn't obey the Secretary General of the United Nations this week. The 2020 presidential election offers the Vatican another chance at redemption. So once again, the Vatican caucus is gearing up to defeat Donald Trump as they promote their socialist darling, Bernie Sanders. The Bernie campaign staff still reigns at the Vatican. More determined and more embedded than ever, now that socialism has come out of the Democratic Party closet, the Vatican socialists are priming the pump to launch a full-scale attack on Donald Trump. The incoming Vatican fire at Donald Trump is now underway. On February 4, 2020, Joseph Stiglitz, member of the Pontifical Academy of Social Sciences, lobbed the first shot across the bow. Not surprisingly, Joe Stiglitz is the founder of the Socialist International Congress, a global group that promotes socialism within the global economy. Stiglitz served as the keynote speaker at the PASS, New Forms of Solidarity Towards Fraternal Inclusion, Integration, and Innovation Conference on February 4, 2020. Stiglitz aimed his pointed remarks at the Trump agenda. Quote, "We have to rethink our international agreements, not in the way that President Trump is talking about, America first, or anybody first. It's the planet first and the people first is what it's about. That is endearing message of solidarity and fraternity from the Vatican globalists." Double-teaming with Stiglitz at the conference appears his fellow Columbia University economist, UN bureaucrat, papal point man, Jeffrey Sachs. For the last 7 years, Sachs serves as a key papal operative, equal globalist, deploying the vast resources and moral power of the Vatican to advance the UN globalist population control environmental agenda, sounding more like an Iowan precinct captain supporting Bernie Sanders. Sachs ripped into Trump during a speech at the February Pontifical Academy conference. Sachs pointedly targeted President Donald Trump by name, saying that the U.S. problem became a far more significant problem with Donald Trump. Listen to that. The U.S. problem. What is the U.S. problem for the Vatican? You know, it's individual liberty. That's right. It's the populist problem became a far more significant problem with Donald Trump. And further added that the U.S. will be absolutely dangerous to the big consensus if Trump wins re-election this year. Okay, well, in that case, you know, I'm praying for Trump to win. Sorry, I'm not a voter, but I'm praying for him to win. That's probably worth more than a vote anyway. Pay attention to the menacing message of fraternity from the globalists who seek to run our lives and choose our president, and Francis, who says, "It is an honor when Americans attack me. We have only just begun." And this from a Catholic website. So I'll put a link to this in the chat room. So if you're a Catholic or you know any Catholics out there, this is a Catholic article you can forward to them. Kind of ignore some of the other things on the website. We don't want to get caught in the snares of idolatry or anything like that. But You know, there are some rebellious Catholics out there, so I like to notify the people of them whenever I can. But you can see, anytime that we seek to consolidate power, this is the Antichrist at work. So anything that goes against it, and President Donald Trump right now is against that, and he is supposedly the most pro-life president since Roe v. Wade, I'm guessing, that we've had. And, you know, you'd think the papacy, if they're truly pro-life, that they would be on that side, that that would be an overriding issue. But see, that goes to the true intent. The papacy, the Antichrist, and their minions have notoriously been murderers throughout history of all ages and genders. Looks like I disconnected here. Okay, well, I guess I'm going to keep going. Anyway, share that article if you have any Catholic friends. It's a good read, and give you an idea of what's going on there and in that sphere of things. Boy, it's piqued my a lot of things during that article while I was reading it. Okay, now I'm reconnected. All right, you're listening Across the Border. It's a Prophecy Reality Edition. Make sure you tell someone about this broadcast so maybe we get maybe a few more listeners in here during the broadcast. The phone usually works, so I don't know why it didn't work today with Patrick. I have other people that simply cannot call me, even on my cell phone. It's bizarre. That would be Smoke. He can't call me on my cell phone or on the studio phone line here when he can't connect to do his broadcast on Sunday. So that's something weird going on there. Always saying all lines are busy. This phone's on the internet. It's an internet phone, so it's not a line. And of course, my cell phone isn't. It's just bizarre. So there's something bizarre going on there. I hope that, you know, I'm getting more interest over here, but I think if I get too much interest, then I'll have a target. And I'm sure they've probably got some people watching out to make sure that I don't succeed over here very much. So whatever, you know, I know, you know, I read Rulers of Evil. I know there's nothing I can do except try to wake up the elect. That's all I'm out here. I'm not here to overthrow the Jesuits or the shadow government or the Antichrist. I know they have their place and that their time and their days are numbered. I read history in advance. You know, I know what's going to happen. And I have no delusions about, you know, taking over the world and changing the world for Christ. All I can do is be obedient to him every day and do my small part here. And so if I reach a few hundred people, hey, I'm doing more than most people, doing more than probably most of the pastors have congregations far less than 100. So, you know, I can't complain that I'm not becoming popular on YouTube or something like that, like all of the, you know, apostates out there and the flat earthers, you know, and others who propose silly things and or left behind or rapture ready and all that nonsense. You become very popular, you know, if you're in line with Counter-Reformation eschatology, then you get, you know, the algorithms will push them to you. Because the Antichrist, you know, had no delusions about it. He's very strong, you know. But, you know, kind of an equal ground in America. I hope that we can keep that here. And it looks like that's the way it's going to stand. But, hey, anyone can suffer persecution under this environment at any time. But remember what the Word says, you know. Not to fear him who can kill the body, but to fear him who can cast both body and soul into hell. Because this isn't it. This life is not it. This isn't where my prize is. My prize doesn't lie on this side of the grave. I'm getting old. It's not going to get better. I don't have a health plan, and I don't believe in health insurance. And so if I get sick and I can't go to the hospital, people for centuries didn't have health insurance or rely on doctors. I mean, when you say 200 years ago, they were bleeding people and feeding them quicksilver, you know, mercury, you know. But you really want to rely on these guys? Right now they're poisoning you with chemotherapy while at the same time they're to cure you from the poisons that they've already fed you. You know, hey, we got more poison from you. And many of my contemporaries, you know, they're carrying around bottles of pills from their doctors. You know, like now they're suffering from polypharmacy. They had a few complaints. I could complain, you know, this or that, but I do the research and I'll be my own doctor. Thank you. I can do plenty of research. I have more information than doctors had 50 years ago, that I can accomplish much more than a doctor could 50 years ago to nip any problems I might have in the bud. But even with that, I'm still, you know, the thou shalt surely die of Genesis applies to me and it applies to all of us. You know, I don't need the best of everything in this life. You know, it's not about what I can get in this life. It's about investing in God's kingdom. So take your money, take your time, and invest it in an eternal investment. You know, that's the way I look at it. You know, I give to different charities and stuff, and I look at it and say, is this a good investment? Is this going to be a good investment for the kingdom of God? Is this going to yield the results outlined in the scriptures that God's people should be performing for the kingdom of God? And then that's where you invest your money. That's what I do. That's what everyone should do. I mean, if you're giving to what's his name? I can't remember that guy's name. Oh, John Hoagie. Yeah, that guy over there. Or if you're giving to Benny Hinn, then stop. You know? If you're supporting these apostate ministries or these ones that are in line with the Counter-Reformation, stop. If you're supporting someone who's preaching the rapture, you know, like Rapture Ready and all these rapture ministries on the internet, stop. You know, you'd be better off just to give your money to the poor, to the homeless shelter in your neighborhood, or the Feed the Poor program. Stop. Don't give to these big ministries, these corporations. You know, invest your money in God's kingdom, where it's needed, where they're reaching out for God's elect with the truth, where they proclaim, they protest the Antichrist, where they preach Reformed theology and eschatology. That's what you need to be supporting. Or people that are actually doing the work, reaching for the poor, you know, and actually feeding them and housing them and giving them the word of God. There are plenty of good ministries out there. And if you're not giving a part of your labor to God's kingdom and you're not giving your time, then what are you investing your life and your labor in? What? That's what you're going to reap. That's where you're going to reap. You know, you're not like on the thief on the cross next to Jesus, where you don't have an opportunity and all you can do is preach to the other guy next to you. You have time, you have years, you have your life and your labor and the fruit of your labor to invest in his kingdom. I mean, if I was earning $100,000 a year, I could give most of it to the kingdom of God. But if I can give 15 or 20% of the little I make, then that's what I'm going to do. That's all I can do, besides my time. And that's what we should all be doing, giving as much as we can. And the more we have, the more we need to give into his kingdom, because that's where we need to store up our treasure. Jesus wasn't making a joke when he said, store up your treasure where neither moth nor rust can corrupt and neither can thieves break through and steal. So I hope that you're doing it. And I can say a lot of people are not doing it here at First Amendment Radio and Prophecy Reality because we barely get by. I wish I could pay my daughter. I'd like to bring my grandchildren on and pay them. Not very much. So can't pay them more than I'm getting, can I? And I'll tell you what, I'm not getting $2,000 a month for my for the needs of my family alone, which includes me, my 42-year-old retarded son, and my 19-year-old daughter who works every day here doing editing and posting for First Amendment Radio. Can't pay her anything, unfortunately. I mean, I pay for her food or clothing and her housing, and I give her some pocket money whenever she needs it, but that's, you know, I'd like to put her to work full-time. I'd like to put my grandson to work full-time. So maybe pray for the Lord to provide for that. So I appreciate your prayers. If you have nothing to give and you're already giving somewhere where you know God is telling you to give, then you can give your prayers. You can include me on your prayer list wherever you have it written on your wall or wherever, and include a prayer for the ministry here. I'd appreciate that. And pray for me. You know, I'm always praying, God, help me, make me better. Help me to be the man you want me to be. Because we're all a work in progress. No matter how old we get, there's so much more work to be done. And we all long for the day when we see him and we will be like him. Yeah, we long for that day. Well, may the Almighty bless you and keep you until we meet again. Nicholas Arthur, signing off.
Visit crosstheborder.org, C-R-O-S-S, crosstheborder.org, to get your print, EPUB, or PDF version of Nicholas Arthur's new book titled When the Third Temple is Built. That's crosstheborder.org. When it comes to prophecy today, much of the evangelical Christian world has their eyes on Israel, waiting and watching to see when the Third Temple will begin to be built. The plans are drawn, the Jewish people are eager. Most evangelical Christians today believe that the rapture will happen before the Third Temple is built. Hi, I'm Michael Yuji. I was taught that Daniel's 70th week was in the future. Is that really what the Bible teaches? Have we searched the scriptures and found this to be true? Why is it so important for a re-established Israel to build a third temple in Jerusalem? Is it necessary to build a temple on the same location already occupied by the Dome of the Rock? Is it necessary for sacrifices to take place in the temple on Temple Mount? Is there really a rapture followed by 7 years of tribulation? What is the New Testament temple? Can we identify history and prophecy?